I mean, what's more football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
You just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL Podcast. Steve Palazzolo back here with Sam Monson. It's our midweek edition, the Wednesday show, Sam, where we can just talk about anything.
Yeah.
You ready?
Also the games that have already happened and will happen.
Monday Night Football, we're going to go long form Monday Night Football Seahawks-Saints review.
Uh-huh.
No, we're not. We're actually not doing that this week. I asked you to come up with a title here, and I like it. Prior perception with the rookie quarterbacks, is something wrong with the Chiefs offense? We haven't talked enough Chiefs this
actually,
week.
Actually, Tyler asked me. You were busy trying to get your ass into the building.
Right on time. We always say 1:15 start on Wednesdays, right?
Uh-huh.
Always 1:15 Eastern time. Never 1 o'clock.
Okay.
Some car issues today.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you what they were later. Wife's fault. Not going to lie.
All right.
It's her fault. Anyway, we'll get into all of this fun stuff, plus all, you know, mailbag and the whole thing. What else we got to sort out here at the top?
Charity update. Well, I don't know. Like, first of all, call for mailbag stuff. We've got some cool emails. Continue to send them in. We'll talk about some on the podcast today. If you want to send us email, general musings, whatever, stories. We had the good story, the Jason Kelsey thing.
Jason Kelsey story.
Good story.
Great.
Or questions for the mailbag podcast, fire us an email at NFL podcast, singular,
yes,
at pff.com.
I get confused sometimes too.
There we go. And while we're at it, what's our promo code if you want 25% off any PFF subscription?
That is NFL pod. NFLPOD. NFL pod gets you 25% off any subscription over at pff.com.
Our gift to you.
It is.
And your gift to us is listening.
Yeah, we're all working together
and
here.
Signing up using our promo code so that we get credit.
25% off is a great deal. It's like a quarter of the, you know, quarter of it off.
It's a lot like a quarter.
It's very close. Anyway, appreciate everybody.
Have you had Eric check the numbers on that? How like it is it?
Get it to the analytics folks here, right, here soon. You want to start out with the rookie quarterback discussion?
Charity update.
Oh, charity.
We are at $4,390.
We got to set a date here.
Of a $2,000 goal, by the way.
We didn't think timing on this. It's starting to get cold.
Right.
Do you want to wait until the spring to do this, or
We have to do it.
Do you want to do like two Fridays from now, maybe?
We can do it whenever. What we do need, though, is potentially a little bit of help from people. Some guy said he'll add more money if you clear whatever the hell it was, 75 miles per hour on a radar gun.
Okay.
So we're going to need a radar gun.
Is there anybody from the University of Cincinnati, the UC baseball team, that listens to this?
We need somebody from the UC baseball team
or
a high school. Any of you work or are at a high school or university, anywhere with a field that has equipment, they could hook us up.
Kentucky area.
You are also going to need a catcher of some kind.
Yeah.
I might have
one. I got a friend who might be able to find one for me.
We'll have to draw up like a waiver of some kind so that we don't get sued over this.
Yeah, splitters in the dirt. Yeah,
I'm unlikely to sue you, but other people I can't vouch for.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you are in any way, shape, or form connected with a Northern Kentucky or Cincinnati area place that has baseball equipment in a field, send us an email, nflpodcast@pff.com, because we're going to get this rolling. I've done at least, you know, one day of batting practice, so I should be good to go.
You've done your part.
Right.
I'm going to play catch once, and I'll be ready to
there
go.
There you go. Then we just need to do it.
Dust off the spikes out of the basement.
And whatever injuries come will come.
Yeah. And we want to do it outdoors, because if it's indoors, it's tough to see.
I tweeted at you earlier, and you didn't answer. Somebody said that you need to shave your head for the next one.
There is no answer.
There's no number we could raise that would make you shave off the Jerry.
I don't think so, no.
Not a number. Because you were willing to pick it out and rock a fro for a grand. That's how this whole thing started.
No, fros are fun.
You're telling me there's not a single number that would make you shave that thing off.
Fros are fun because I'm shower away from
it'll grow back.
It's
not like it's permanent. Now, it might expose some concerns in terms of coverage and color, but it would grow back.
I don't need to be exposed. We don't need that. So
wow, yeah. Not a single number.
I don't want to know what the real shape of my head is or any of that stuff.
I thought you'd at least fire out a number that, you know, a difficult to achieve, but
I would do it.
Tempting number.
Yeah. Somebody's returning their call. My call.
Oh, wow.
Sorry, Chris. We're live. We're live on the air. I get a call. Got to call the boss back after this. Got some business to discuss.
Okay.
It would have to be. It would have to be for my friends over at Heritage House again, and it would have to be a monster number. It would have to be.
Ballpark me. Give me something to shoot.
I mean,
for.
It's at least five figures.
Okay.
Close to six. I mean, we're talking 50 to 100K.
Okay, right.
And then some like lifetime Starbucks or something like that. You know,
I can't pull that.
There's got to be some incentives in there as well. Just for charity. Mm. Anyway, that's how this whole thing started.
Yeah.
That's how our charity drives started.
It did. So I have a metal bat that we're going to use. We have a wooden bat with our logo and the logo of Best Friends Animal Society on its way at some point as well. We'll rock that on the podcast for a while. We've got essentially $4,400 already. There is more money waiting to be thrown in once people see the extent of the injury and or hilarity that ensues from this baseball. So, you know, there's always time to donate still. Go to my pin tweet. You didn't put it as your pin tweet because you're some kind of jackass. But my pin tweet, BFF_Sam, and donate and help us get there. And then start thinking about what we do next.
All right. Anything else we got to cover here?
I think that's housekeeping out of the way, right?
Yes. Well done. We do a little bit more housekeeping on Wednesdays.
So if you're the people that hate the intro and the housekeeping, now is when you start listening. I don't know how to help you there with the
time
stamps.
Fast forward to this particular time.
Fast forward to now and you're good.
All right. What are your thoughts on the rookie quarterbacks here? The way you position this as like perception. You want to go back and say, here's what we thought and here's where they are here through 7 weeks of the NFL season?
Well, no. So we had a question that came in from somebody called Matthew Story, which I think was an interesting discussion to have. He essentially says, Mike Renner famously described the Texans' decision to draft Davis Mills in the second round as setting the pick on fire. Yet through the first 6 weeks of their careers, he's produced an almost identical PFF grade, admittedly one in the mid-50s, to Trevor Lawrence, and on an equally terrible team. Does this not indicate that the Texans are getting good value for their second round pick? Additionally, it seems that as if Sam and Steve consistently talk about Lawrence's upside on individual plays while openly mocking Mills for being terrible. Often in the same podcast. I'm just curious, what is it that separates the rookies in the eyes of PFF? Is there a quantifiable reason for the seemingly double standard, or is it first overall pick syndrome? Matthew.
That's a good, it's a fair question.
It is.
It's a fair point. I would say my answer to that would be, I think you, maybe, have been a little bit too harsh on Davis Mills overall.
No.
A little bit.
No.
The answer is, college data still matters. Like what happened in college still matters.
And that's one answer.
Oh, that is, well, I mean, that's one of my, that's one answer then.
Uh-huh.
You know, what we saw from Trevor Lawrence at Clemson still matters in his projection because we're only seven games into the NFL season, six games into his career. What Davis Mills did or didn't do at Stanford still matters in this whole thing.
Uh-huh.
What's your answer, by the way?
Well,
it should be good.
Trevor Lawrence has actually done good things. As much as their overall grade nets out to pretty much the same area, it's come about in very different circumstances. Trevor Lawrence has made big plays consistently, you know, most weeks. He has 10 big-time throws, which is a healthy 4.5% big-time throw rate. Davis Mills has 4 big-time throws, which is a big-time throw rate of 2.2%, which is lower than Tua last year, which was the lowest in the NFL. So essentially, Davis Mills has done very little positive in an offense that's been like specifically pared back and made idiot-proof for him, whereas Trevor Lawrence has essentially been tossed the keys to the, I can't say Ferrari because that really isn't the Ferrari, has been tossed the keys to the new F-150 and said, knock yourself out, Trev. Go do what you do.
The Jags offense is an F-150.
Sure. New F-150.
Feels rich.
Right out of the showroom.
Yeah.
Sitting there on the forecourt. They've just tossed him the keys and said, go nuts. And he's been doing what he's doing. Davis Mills has been
with
running
broken
this like...
brakes. Right. The offensive line.
Well, Davis Mills has been running this very pared back version of the offense. Has done almost nothing in terms of like big value add throws. And has made as many boneheaded mistakes. More or less. So, the point being, it's... yes... there is a degree to which there are priors on these two players still matter on the basis that we're only like seven games into the season. So what we knew about them up until this point is still a relevant data point. But there's also a degree to which, albeit even if their PFF grades are in the same ballpark right now, the composition of those grades is very different.
Yeah, no, that's a fair answer. So I think a combination of both of those are part of that. Do you want to expound upon that with other quarterbacks and their and what are do we want to reset expectations the rookies based off what we've seen?
Is there anybody through 7 weeks for whom you are tossing out the prior evaluation and are now in a completely different headspace?
I think Zach Wilson's been a little concerning. I think Zach Wilson's been more concerning than, say, Trevor Lawrence. And again, their grades are close, ultimately. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see better play from Wilson. So I here's what I think. When it's not so much are they good, are they not good, it's the style that I think is indicative. So the example I always use is Andrew Luck, right? With Andrew Luck, I expected this Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, you know, smart quarterback that was going to get rid of the ball quickly in this whole thing. What we got was hold the ball long, and he played a little bit more like Big Ben or Brett Favre, right? He had a completely different playing style for the majority of his career, Andrew Luck, than maybe we anticipated coming out. I think Zach Wilson's playing style, Justin Fields' playing style, both of their styles are telling at this point. Wilson holding the ball a long time, over 3 seconds time to throw, and he's not a mobile quarterback that's going to create with his legs, or he can create outside the pocket, so that meshes a little bit. I wasn't fully expecting that from Wilson. I thought he'd work a little bit quicker, and especially after the preseason, I thought he'd work a little bit quicker and then sprinkle in the outside the pocket stuff. Deshaun Watson was a guy who in college he got rid of the ball quickly. And he rarely got to a second read, and it was a lot of like one read and run. And when he got to the NFL, he started playing more like a Russ or a Josh Allen plays like now, or you know, extend an Aaron Rodgers, guys who extend plays a little bit more. Watson wasn't that guy in college from a style standpoint. He had the ability, obviously. He changed his style in the NFL, and that style ended up working well for him so far in the NFL.
Yeah.
So I think those are the types of things that I see where maybe my perceptions change. Not so much how good they are, but the style that they play.
The confusing part about Zach Wilson is the preseason part. Like if I hadn't seen his preseason performance and this was the Zach Wilson we got, that would have made sense to me. Like a lot of sense. Obviously it would be disappointing, and it's in kind of the lower end of the spectrum of what you would hope for a rookie quarterback, even one that plays with his style. But it makes sense, right? You go from this BYU offense where you're barely ever touched, you're under pressure, never. Everything, all the pressure essentially is stuff that you've created by making these crazy outside of structure plays. And you really weren't tested by good defenses, by good pass rushes, by good coverage, all those things. So as much as you looked special that year, you can easily imagine that when you translate to the NFL and everything gets tougher and you're under pressure a lot more and your receivers aren't as good relative to their opposition, the coverage is better relative to their opposition, the pass rush is suddenly all over you. I mean, you can imagine pretty quickly that going south and him looking like this. But we then saw this preseason where he just looked cool, calm, collected, in charge of the offense, in rhythm. Everything was just dropped back, hit the guy. You know, force feeding the ball to Corey Davis, just it looked easy. And that is a little bit difficult to square and to pull all those things together and make a coherent picture out of it. But
here's a number just to back that up, okay? So again, using premium stats 2.0, all, you know, 25% off with your NFL pod promo code. So if you go to the passing grades page and you sort by time to throw. And time to throw, I mention this all the time, it's a little misleading the way we word it. It's not time to throw. That implies that the offensive line is giving you the time. It's more of like a chosen time. This is how much you've chosen to take as the quarterback. It is always a little bit skewed because it's snap to release, right? Snap to release or snap to the end of, or you crossing the line as a scrambler. So it's always skewed a little bit toward quarterbacks who scramble a lot. So the highest times to throw in the NFL, Lamar Jackson, 3.17, and then just below that, Zach Wilson, Jameis Winston, Jalen Hurts, Taylor Heineke. All of those guys, those are all the guys who are above 3 seconds. the number of scrambles that they have, the guys that are above three, you've got Lamar with 30. Winston has 13. Hurts has 29. Heinicke has 27. So they all have a bunch of plays where they scrambled. They scrambled out of the pocket and then crossed the line of scrimmage, became runners. Zach Wilson has four. That's it. Only four scrambles. So he's got this really long time in the pocket in a pretty quick-hitting offense, right? We're talking about the Shanahan scheme that generally gets rid of the ball pretty quickly. He's got the highest time in pocket or snap to release without scrambles skewing that. So his timing has been poor, right? He has not played well within the structure of the offense. So that'd be my Zach Wilson concern, or the change of perception that he's just going to maybe play. And he held the ball a little bit at BYU, but it was because I got some clean pockets, right. I got some good receivers, a lot of the field stuff, right? I got clean pockets, I got good receivers. I didn't think that would be Zach Wilson's style.
Actually, though, the one player of that group that I think I have changed my opinion on a little bit is Trey Lance. I thought he looked readier than he has looked so far when being on the field. Now, look, we're dealing with stupidly small sample sizes in Trey Lance. 60 dropbacks in the regular season. I don't know how many he had in preseason, but it wasn't many either. Where are we? Trey Lance, 53 in the preseason. So like 110 total dropbacks for Trey Lance in the NFL. It is a crazy small sample size. On the other hand, he has made way more mistakes mentally in those dropbacks than you saw from him in college. Now, obviously, massive jump up in competition, FCS level to the NFL. It's as big as it's going to get for a quarterback. But I didn't see the flaws in terms of reading, making reads, going through the progression, hitting the right guy, diagnosing coverages. I didn't see those in college, and figured that would mean he would have a more successful transition than we have seen so far. Now, there's an argument that says, well, just because you didn't see it didn't mean they existed. You know, like, you're not facing the most difficult defenses in the world at the FCS level. But I did think that Trey Lance would look better than we've seen from him so far. Again, albeit on just like, you know, tiny one start.
I want to talk Justin Fields a little bit. There's been, part of it's going to be explaining our grades and some of our stats. So I want to get into that. But first, don't forget, of course, it's football season. And you know what that means. Means we're going for two here with the sponsors of today's show. It is Manscaped. Manscaped. There it is. Yeah, they sent us t-shirts.
It's the most awkward reveal ever.
Well, let's just be happy that all I revealed was a Manscaped shirt. Blitzing through hairs has never been easier, and it's time for you to join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using promo code PFF over at manscaped.com. It's 20% off plus free shipping if you go there right now. It's three and out the window with all other trimmers. That's right. Go tame that Wildcat offense right now. The brand new Lawnmower 4.0. It's here to take your defense to the next level. This fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. That's trademarked, by the way. The Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor, new multifunction on-off switch that can engage a travel lock, and it gives you the ability to turn the 4000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. So you can do night games.
You can do night games, did you just say?
Night games. Well, because you know where I'm going next. Winter's coming. Rain, snow, or sleet. They're no match for the waterproof power of the 4.0.
When you say night games, you're referring to like primetime football games as opposed to things you might do with a shaver and your nuts at night.
I don't know what I meant. But I'm just saying there's a light there, and it's waterproof, it feels like you've got no limitations.
When you start ad-libbing with the Manscaped read, I'm just saying you need to be very careful and specific about the words you're using.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can get into some pretty difficult territory.
Yeah, care was not taken.
Uh-huh.
Care was not taken here.
No care.
But there's
stepped with your big, whatever, size 16s right into the muddy waters of double entendre.
I should stick to the script. There's no 15-yard penalty for this clipping. Like, that's a good line. Didn't have to come up with it myself. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the promo code PFF and, stiff arm your pubes on your way to the playoffs. That's better than ad-libbing. It's Manscaped.
Yes.
Manscaped.com.
Well, that's been like HR-approved language. Yours, who knows?
Has it, though?
I mean, not by our HR, but by somebody's. I can't believe you're covering up the Manscaped t-shirt.
Oh, I'm not. I just happen to be wearing it under my Gators pullover here.
I just, like, you know, it's a small, discreet, Manscaped, your balls will thank you thing on the front. But what people don't know,
which way the there it is.
What people don't know is that on the back, there's the same thing written, but like all across the back, like size a million font.
Your balls will thank you.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I'm surprised you're not showing.
I will wear a Manscaped shirt that says "Jingle Balls to the Wall" during the holiday season.
Hell
here,
yes.
That I would. If
maybe
you guys,
that's what they're sending.
Do you guys check in on our Reeds Manscaped? If you do, you should send that shirt.
I really hope people are buying this crap because
I do too.
These are the best Reeds we have.
I do too. I mean, again, we're all helping each other out here. We're giving you guys subscriptions for 25% off. We're giving you Manscaped discounts. You're having, you know, getting your balls shaved.
They're fun reads.
We're keeping Manscaped reads.
They're fun reads, and they're legitimately good products. And not just the not just the wash bag that you seem to think
they're
that
up
I love.
To the 4.0. It's great. Anyway, let's get into the Justin Fields discussion.
Oh God. Do you know where Matt Nagy is right now?
I don't.
He's in an undisclosed location. I'm not even making that up. He is not disclosing where he is working from now that he is he has COVID. He's not in the building, but he won't tell anybody where he is.
Why?
I think because he's really, 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 really bad at dealing with the media.
Yeah.
Is my initial reaction to that. Like,
was he bad the last 3 years or is it just this year?
I don't remember. I think maybe he was and nobody noticed because everybody was so focused on like Trubisky that we just didn't notice that like on a weekly basis, Matt Nagy was saying something that gets him into trouble. I don't know. We'd have to go back and check like the last 2 years worth of press conferences and stuff for Matt Nagy. And frankly, I say we should do that, but there's no way I'm doing that. Like if somebody wants to go and check how many dumb things he said over the last couple of years,
just throw some of our interns
go
on that,
for it.
For sure.
But I'm not doing that.
All right. Well, there's
you want to get it? What do you want
to? There's just a lot of Justin Fields stuff to discuss. First off, I think there are some stats that are telling, and I want to educate some people on how to use the PFF stats and numbers
after having misled them yourself.
I may have misled a bit, got some good traction. I may have misled you a little bit, so I want to explain that. Secondly, we have Big Dano, Dan Orlovsky, going out there saying, just throw it all out. 2021 doesn't even count for Justin Fields. There's nothing you could take from this evaluation. Nothing. Can't take a thing from the evaluation. Just throw. We're in week 7. It's over. You might as well just throw him back on the bench and sit him because we're not going to learn anything here. So I'd love to get your reaction to that. So the stat that I threw out there, and again, if you guys have the Elite Package, you can get all these numbers. Sacks that are directly attributed to the quarterback. And this is like there's no shared blame.
And
there is not even a question. This is only the quarterback.
Directly is the important word there.
Yes. And I worded this really well. But again, this involves people understanding context and nuance and stuff like that. And let's not set that expectation on social media. This is only the quarterback. Yes, they also have a hand in other times that they get sacked. But these are specifically the plays where you're sitting in a clean pocket and then you leave and you run into a sack. Or you're sitting in a clean pocket and you work backwards and all of a sudden your offensive lineman who's blocking for an 8-yard drop back has to try to block for an 18-yard drop back and like that doesn't exist. So the defender sees you and he goes and gets you. Or your rollout, you get that free rollout, right? You got nobody in your face. And you have the option to throw it away or you're going to scramble or whatever it is. And you don't throw it away. You take the sack, right? So we can assign these directly to quarterbacks. Or you hold the ball for 6 seconds in the pocket. You're just sitting there in the pocket. And your blocker can't hold the block for 6 seconds. And you get sacked. So on the, in that particular number, the guys who have the most sacks, if I can find it. Where is it? Who's got the most sacks?
This is well done.
This is very well done. Kyler Murray has 8. That we've directly attributed to Kyler Murray. 7 for Zach Wilson. Your boy Davis Mills has 6. Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes each have 6. Justin Fields, Ben Roethlisberger, Teddy Bridgewater, 5. And of course, Fields has played far less football than all these other guys, so the 5's a lot. But he's also been sacked a lot more times, so as a percentage. So there are people responding saying, hey, Fields only has 5 out of his million sacks or his, right? But that's not exactly the case. But that is one stat, and that is one way to put like 100% of the blame on the quarterback for a sack. The other number that is more consistent is, it's not even that it's more consistent, but it's percentage of pressure dropbacks that turn into sacks. And this, shockingly, Sam, this one's also been misinterpreted because I have people, Bears fans saying, well, he's been pressured a ton. I'm like, this is percentage of your pressure dropbacks that turn into sacks. And Fields has the highest rate. We mentioned this all throughout draft season. he was at like 26-27% last year at Ohio State, which would be bad in the NFL. It's really bad for college. He's at 33%. So 33% of his pressured dropbacks become sacks. That is a high number, and it's a number that is generally pretty consistent for quarterbacks. The other guys at the top here, Baker Mayfield, Davis Mills, Russell Wilson, a lot of the same number guys, Aaron Rodgers, Ryan Tannehill. I mentioned the Tannehill comp throughout this whole process, right? This is a number that Tannehill's been bad at. When Tannehill throws the ball, he's good, but pocket presence-wise, he's taken more negative plays than he should. Fields has that element to his game. Joe Burrow's up there right now, also Kyler Murray. So I just wanted to kind of explain that stuff and also talk through it. Like, this isn't unexpected stuff. A lot of people are trying to explain away Justin Fields' struggles or just ignore them, but I think these are warning sign things that we either saw in, that we saw in college that are, you know, the spotlight's on them that much greater here in the NFL.
Yeah. The problem with this Justin Fields thing is it's way too nuanced for people to, like, we live in a world where it's somebody's fault. And if it's not your fault, it's their fault. If it's not their fault, it's his fault. It's somebody's fault. It can't be everybody's fault. It can't be a complex, like, web of fault, but that's what it is. So Justin Fields has certain stylistic elements to his game that do not help the situation that he's in, and in fact, make it worse. Like, just, we talk about force multipliers, and we usually talk about it in a good way. You add Ja'Marr Chase to the Bengals offense, and that is a force multiplier for good. It makes Burrow better, it makes the offensive line better, it makes number two, number three receivers better, it makes everybody better, and it compounds and makes them better than just the addition of Ja'Marr Chase. It is a force multiplier for good on the Cincinnati Bengals offense. Justin Fields, the way he plays the game right now, is a force multiplier for bad for the things that are wrong with the Chicago Bears offense. It has an offensive line that isn't good. Now, the offensive line also is not garbage. It's being made to look worse.
It's not as bad as everybody says.
Correct. It has a collection of plays right now that are not good and are therefore not scheming receivers open quickly in a way that would make everybody look better. Now, Justin Fields, again, is not helping that, so that looks worse than it actually is. All of these things are coming together, compounding on each other, and the situation looks worse than it should be. Like, no, each part of that is looking worse than it is on its own, because all of them together have this compounding negative effect. So the issue with this thing is, you know, you make the point, hey, Justin Fields holding on to the ball too long, and then you're going to have somebody going through all these plays where he's buried after 2 seconds and being like, what are you talking about? Like, this is, none of these plays are his fault. You're like, no, none of those plays were his fault, but other plays were.
Yeah.
And that's the issue, right? And same thing with the offensive line. Like, you go, well, okay, all these plays make him look terrible. Yes, but there's a bunch of other plays where they don't. Like, his average time to sack is actually pretty high. Like, we think of all the, you can look at the plays where he gets buried after 2 seconds. Most of the plays are not those plays. His offensive line is doing a better job than people think he is. So Ben Baldwin tweeted this graph that was like PFF team pass blocking grade against sack rate, right? And it has Justin Fields off on an island on his own at the top in terms of massively high sack rate. But his pass blocking, the team's pass blocking grade was somewhere in the middle. I think it was slightly below average, right? The point is, for a quarterback to be so far off on his own in terms of where that plotted, it's not a protection problem. It's something else. Now, it doesn't mean it's entirely a Justin Fields problem, though we know that that particular sort of data point is quite quarterback driven, but it's also the other elements of the passing game. So it's like, it's the receivers being open, it's the play design, it's all those different things. It isn't the pass protection in its entirety,
right?
Because the pass protection essentially is slightly below average. And the other point to make about that is a slightly below average pass blocking group will typically manifest itself in reasonable play, and then like catastrophic breakdown, right? So like a below average pass blocker typically gets whooped a few times a game. And those are the plays you remember. So in your brain, you're like, this is the worst pass blocking group in the history of humanity, right? Because you remember the ass kickings they got.
Right.
That's how that like manifests itself. But on that same graph, you have Tua, whose offensive line is miles worse than the Bears. Like, I cannot stress that enough. Tua is working behind a vastly inferior offensive line than the Bears. But Tua has one of the lowest sack rates in the NFL. So something is happening there between the quarterbacks and the passing game to go from one of the worst sack rates in the NFL to, in fact, the worst sack rate in the NFL to one of the best. It's something in the passing game. It isn't the pass protection.
And it's not just, and we talked the other day about the Dolphins offense, like RPO, RPO, right. RPO. That is protecting the offensive
yes.
line, right?
That
because
is,
on an RPO, you're run blocking.
And that's stuff that the offense and the play calling should be doing and isn't doing enough of
yeah.
and wouldn't be a field specific thing. But I think Fields and the play calling and the offensive design, like all those things are working together, making it worse than it should be.
I'm looking for numbers to kind of like, because I also get that perception watching games. I have this feeling that the Bears offensive line is bad because I'm remembering those highlights too, and right. I'm looking for numbers to back them up. Again, they're not great, but even just average.
They're not even good. Like, they are below average.
Yeah.
But there's a world between below average and disaster.
Right, and I'll give an example that I made earlier in this year as well. But their average time to pressure when Fields is out there is over 2.5.
Right.
That's middle of the pack. That's not crazy. There are teams that are in the 2-3 range that are actually, when pressure comes, it is faster, and the Bears aren't in there. And the example I used earlier in the year was in the Penei Sewell, Jamar Chase debate and all that stuff. Remember, there was the touchdown pass Joe Burrow threw against the Steelers. He got rid of the ball in 2.1 seconds because Jamar Chase was open. And he throws the go ball, but Cameron Hayward had one of his best pass rushes of the season, right? He absolutely destroys the guard, probably gets a really high PFF grade, but the ball was out. Right, and Burrow wasn't even pressured on that play. It didn't even count as a pressure because the ball was out so quickly. So you mitigate bad blocking and you mitigate pressure by getting rid of the ball. And sometimes that's on the quarterback. And I think you're also making a good point. Nate Tice from The Athletic has made this point about the route concepts and these other, you know, there's not an outlet for him. There's not this or that for Fields. There's not stuff baked in to be able to get rid of the ball a little bit quicker. There are other plays where I think I mentioned the other day, Fields is working the wrong side in quick game. And it's like, yeah, he gets hit. He probably shouldn't, though. Even with bad blocking, he probably shouldn't have gotten hit on that play. He had a strip sack the other day where Devin White was directly in his face. Like, between me and you, Devin White with his 4-4 speed, and Fields tried to make a calculated decision. He was kind of looking off to the side. But you should feel this. 4-4 linebacker is, you know, a yard or two away from me, and I'm going to go through my full throwing motion to try to throw the ball, and he gets strip sacked. He didn't time it up well. He didn't feel it. All of these things are true, right? I'm with you. Create the web of, you know, multiple reasons for this stuff, even if the nuance gets lost on things.
And I think part of the reason that that offensive line possibly looks worse than it is because when they get beaten quickly, he seems to be, It results in the worst possible situation. Like, Fields fumbles a lot. Now, again, they're not. I'm not saying that these fumbles are necessarily Fields' fault, but I'm saying if you get beat quickly and at the end of that play the quarterback loses the ball and it's a fumble, you are going to remember that as a catastrophic error way more than you would if he just gets popped, bounces up, and moves on, right? Is that reasonable to say?
Yeah.
So I initially thought what it was is that maybe they were losing. When they were losing quickly, it was in like high leverage situations. Would it surprise you to know that the Bears have a top three pass blocking grade on third down?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because again, I come away from the game.
So it isn't that.
With that perception as well.
But Fields does have a ton of fumbles. So I think what it might be is that when they lose hard, it results in Fields fumbling the ball. And so you're like, oh, look at this. This offensive line's getting them killed out there. It's turning the ball over. We look miserable. One more point to go back to the Dan Orlovsky point. And look, Mina Kimes, friend of the show, was kind of defending him a little bit on Twitter. Obviously, they're on the same show and the same segment. And she was like, look, if you want to parse like the actual specific words that everybody uses when they're live on TV or live on a podcast trying to make a point, you can make everything look pretty bad, right? If you take it in the worst possible way or the literal sense. The point he's trying to make is that the situation around him is terrible and you can't judge Justin Fields based off what's happening this year, right? There's a degree of truth to that. The problem is...
Yeah, and I'll give you another example of that too.
Yep. The problem to me, though, is that the inevitable conclusion to that is, why is he playing now then? And you are one of the people that pushed to put him in the lineup,
yeah.
right? There were a lot of people that were pitchforks and torches hammering down Matt Nagy's door and were like, put in the rookie right now.
Need it.
You must
right.
put him in. That's how
I'm
you...
I'm sick of seeing Andy Dalton. Need to see Justin
right.
Fields.
Now you're saying that the situation around him is so bad that you can't take anything from his season. And if anything, that has to put it pretty close to the point of, well, is it damaging him then? Which is the question I would raise. But my point is...
I haven't seen that question raised, other than maybe
right.
from you.
But the point is, like, that's the inevitable conclusion of that, right? If you can't learn anything from what Justin Fields is going through right now, then why are you putting him through it? And why is he starting? And remember, you're a person that wanted that and insisted that had to happen. Now, you can make the case that, hey, look, in a few months' time, this might not be an issue because maybe Matt Nagy gets fired or they clean house or whatever happens, then we get to learn. But again, like the only purpose in any of this is Justin Fields is the presumed future face of the franchise and the guy who's going to lead you somewhere good. In your take, the people that are saying this, in the eyes of those people, what needs to happen for that to be the case is people get fired, a change in regime, whatever. But it means that right now, all you're doing is exposing him to damage.
Yeah.
Having campaigned to get him in the lineup.
So the question I would bring up, which other quarterbacks through the years have been in a similar situation? Let's pretend that the Bears situation is as bad as it gets. Let's pretend the offensive line is as bad as perception. Let's pretend that the route concepts make no sense. Matt Nagy's an idiot, all that stuff. And see, if you just cut that clip, you would think that I was saying Matt Nagy's an idiot, but I was really saying, let's assume all of these things are true.
The social team got that one ready.
Let's assume all of those things are true. Who else in recent history has been, I'll give you two names, guys that have been in that level of situation. Jared Goff in 2016 as a rookie with the Rams,
mm-hmm.
where it was just everything was bad
yep.
under Jeff Fisher. And then 2018, Josh Rosen with the Arizona Cardinals, the worst pass blocking grade for any team in PFF history, also with nobody to throw to besides like year 15 Larry Fitzgerald. That was Josh Rosen's situation. I don't think, could you learn anything from those quarterbacks in that? And so here's what happened with those two quarterbacks. Jared Goff went from the worst situation in the NFL to one of the best with Sean McVay. And we'll see. I don't know how much Jared Goff evidence there is this year with how bad the situation is again in Detroit. But he turned Jared Goff into a Super Bowl caliber quarterback, for whatever that's worth. They went to a Super Bowl with him. Josh Rosen never got out of it with Arizona. It actually was telling that there was no signs of life coming out of that offense, and he's never salvaged his career. So with that said, again, can both things be true?
Yeah.
Do I think that Justin Fields' ceiling might actually be a little bit lower than I anticipated because of what I've seen this year? Maybe. Can he also come out of it in a better situation like Jared Goff did and make a run and play some good football? Absolutely. Like, again, both things can be true. But I think there might be something in this evaluation that it is so bad right now and Fields isn't making it better, that might be a bit of a concern.
One team with a worse pass blocking grade collectively than the Chicago Bears is the New England Patriots, because they haven't had their starting offensive line, right? They've been decimated. They've had to play rookies. They've had to play backups. All these guys have either been injured or had COVID or all these things. Like, Mac Jones has actually been dealing with this second string offensive line for most of the time, and it hasn't been great. Mac Jones has a PFF grade above 80 and is by far the best looking rookie quarterback. And it's not like Mac Jones has a ton of weapons to throw to either. Now, I will happily concede that I think the Patriots have done a better job as a scheme of mitigating those problems than the Chicago Bears have. But again, if you are of the opinion that, like, you can't make the argument that Justin Fields' offensive line and the protection is so catastrophic that he has no earthly opportunity to succeed because Mac Jones is doing so. And look, Joe Burrow and the Bengals, their offensive line, their pass protection has been much better. It's still lower graded than the Chicago Bears' pass blocking is. Like, there are teams out there that are perfectly functional with the level of pass blocking that Justin Fields has been dealing with.
Okay, I found the number to confirm that the bad is really bad for the Bears. The percentage of quick pressures. So the average time to pressure is high because Fields has some of those plays where he he brings it upon himself late.
Sure.
They do have a quick pressure rate. So pressure that comes in 2.5 or faster is 28% of dropbacks or of total pressures. Pass plays. 28%. That's
pretty high.
That is the highest. That's second highest in the league behind Davis Mills and the Texans.
Right.
So again, depending on how you slice and dice the numbers, I think you can confirm or deny priors or perception and all that stuff. The pressure is coming quicker on a per snap basis, though, with Justin Fields.
When it comes. Yeah.
But your point on Mac Jones is an interesting one, because every time we talk about Mac Jones, what was impressive? He's got a guy in his face, he's throwing it, and making some big throws and throwing the ball accurately. That goes back to that number, percentage of pressure dropbacks that become sacks. Mac Jones is making accurate throws under pressure. Justin Fields is getting sacked more often.
And to be clear, I do kind of agree with the idea that this year is basically a write-off for Justin Fields. I don't think you're going to learn anything good from him this year. But I do think that there are things to be learned from him. I mean, Dan Orlovsky even said something like, oh, these problems that we're seeing from him now are the same problems that he had at Ohio State, but they don't mean anything about him going forward. I would argue they kind of do. Like, if you've seen the same thing from a guy in college and the NFL, albeit in a very limited sample size with a crappy situation around him, I mean, it's not going to be that easy to suddenly make that not a thing.
Right.
Like, you don't just change a player's traits from like what you've seen from him consistently going forward. So if that has been a thing that's held up, now what you're saying is, in order for this not to be a problem, we need to completely overhaul the situation around him where it's no longer affecting things the way it is right now.
Just on the other end of that spectrum, when I posted these stats, a lot of people said, who are the best quarterbacks at avoiding sacks when they're under pressure? And number one is my favorite player, Josh Allen. Fantastic. Now, the list is an interesting list, right? Josh Allen, 8.4%. So that's, when he's pressured, only 8.4% turn into sacks.
And that's not a number he's been good at for his entire career.
But he's gotten better at it every single year. So if you are a Fields guy, you would point to the Josh Allen progression. I did look it up. Fields has Allen's gotten better at this every single year. It's a very consistent number year to year. But again, Josh Allen seems to be bucking a lot of trends here. He has gotten better at it. Then you have Matt Ryan, because he just gets rid of the ball. Taylor Heinicke, he's more of a scrambler. That's a surprising name given his style. Matthew Stafford, he's getting rid of the ball quickly, 11.7. Kirk Cousins, Tua, who you mentioned. Trevor Lawrence is good at this number. Keeping my Andrew Luck comp. Luck was awesome at this number. He did not take a lot of sacks, even though he invited a lot of pressure. Tom Brady's up there. Jalen Hurts is up there, which I'm a little surprised by. And then Jameis.
There are people out there that think that, reasonably so, that a sack rate is essentially a pass blocking number, right?
Yeah.
The rate at which you are sacked and the rate at which you get sacked when you're pressured, those are protection numbers. And there's a degree to which they are, right? If you have a bad enough offensive line, you are going to get buried regardless of how good you are. But it is what we have learned is that it is a very, very malleable number when it comes to quarterbacks. Quarterbacks can influence that more than anything else, including swapping out a tackle is going to have less of an impact than changing from a quarterback that's not good at this to a quarterback that is good at this. And one of the great ways, Peyton Manning was always one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL at this statistic. Didn't matter what protection you put in front of him, he wasn't going to take a sack. He was so good at that quick adjustment that when pressure comes, I know where I'm going with the ball. It's not where I wanted to go with the ball, but I can get it out of my hands so that you don't sack me, because that's a negative play. So there are these all-time lists of, most sacked player ever, all those kinds of things. Manning is nowhere on those lists.
Oh, no, he was incredible at that. Did not take negative plays.
Eli Manning has a much higher sack rate than Peyton Manning, and Peyton Manning played a lot longer. Yeah. These are the things. There are...
And Peyton did it not to the detriment of throwing the ball down the field, which made him so special.
Peyton Manning is the top few of every sort of cumulative passing statistic in NFL history, except sack rate and except total sacks. He did not take a lot of sacks. He was so good at this. So if you have a quarterback that understands how to do this, you don't need to take a lot of sacks, even if you don't have a good offensive line. Remember, they started Tony Hugo for a while, who was a human turnstile, and it didn't matter.
Good. NFL fans hungry for a big win this week? Well, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, they get you covered. New customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game, and if they do, you win $200 in free bets. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. It's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't yet available in your state, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code PFF. Bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game. So you can go find the heavy favorites is my suggestion. All they have to do is win. And you win $200 in free bets. If they win, you win. With promo code PFF this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit. $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Bet you didn't think that Tony Hugo would be randomly catching a stray on an October 2021 podcast.
I know you very well, so I'm, you know, it actually, it's on my bingo card. We haven't mentioned Christian Hackenberg, who's like my free space. We haven't mentioned him in a while. He's my free space on the Sam bingo card.
I'm going to come up with a new crappy offensive lineman that the Colts put in front of Peyton Manning so that I don't use Tony Hugo next time.
Who did they? They had a bad right tackle for a while too, right?
They had a lot of bad players.
Ryan Wilja.
Ryan was all right.
I'm just trying to think of names.
Trying to think of old Colts linemen.
Trying to think of names. Anthony Costanzo started off slow, but he became a real good, solid player.
Yeah,
just not for Peyton. They drafted him for Peyton, and then you know,
well, some unfortunate things happen.
We broke down the Manning cast, by the way. Listen, the read says winner, winner, chicken dinner. I did not. I'm just saying.
Some people out there want to die when you do that.
The Manning cast. We broke it down on the PFF Daily. That was fun. Daily's on YouTube, by the way. And that's another thing. As you're emailing, I do want to give away. We're giving away the 25% off. I want to give away Edge subscriptions to people that are subscribed to both the PFF NFL Daily and the PFF NFL Podcast. So send those screenshots that you're subscribed to both, nflpodcast@pff.com, and I'll give away. If we get over 100, again, I'm not there yet. If we get over 100, we're at like 25 people that sent that in. If we get over 100, I will give away an Edge subscription to somebody that sent in a screenshot. All right. All right. What else do we put on this list here? Is something wrong with the Chiefs offense?
Oh God.
Did you do a deep dive on Patrick Mahomes and his turnover worthy plays? Did you do a little deep dive?
I mean, sort of. Like, again, this came from a social clip of Mina Kimes essentially saying that there's nothing wrong with the Chiefs offense. They've got a ton of turnovers. Same thing we've been saying. They've actually been pretty successful, but they've had a ton of turnovers, and we know the turnovers are variants. Therefore, the Chiefs' offense is fine.
This meshes with an email here.
Okay.
That I'll get into. Good. Keep going.
So anyway, several people on social media of the analytics community, TM, were like, yeah, I agree with Mina. I stand with Mina. The Chiefs' offense is fine. They're Patrick Mahomes, like... I can't remember where I said it.
EPA. EPA. That's what they were doing.
If you don't like the banging on the table.
I was doing that on purpose.
You
that was
hated the last 10 seconds of this show.
The APA's, EPA's
the EPA, but also the idea that Patrick Mahomes actually has a lower turnover-worthy play rate this year than last year and the year before that, I think. So it isn't that he's turning the ball over more often or putting the ball in harm's way more often. It's that he's getting more unlucky. Like, he had a unfeasibly low turnover rate compared to the amount he was putting the ball in harm's way for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
This season, it's the other way, right? He's like 100%, which is not to say that every turnover-worthy play has been turned over, but it's to say that he has the same number of turnovers as turnover-worthy plays. Like, remember, there are turnover-worthy plays that do not result in turnovers. There are also not turnover-worthy plays that result in turnovers. So that those are not the same plays, but it's the same number.
Right.
So anyway, they were arguing this, including the good doctor, Eric Eager, from the PFF forecast. And he was using that turnover-worthy play number to say, look, this is all that's changed is the luck is the variance of the turnovers. And like statistically, you assume that disappears every week, right? Because it's like tossing a coin. Just because you come up heads 10 times doesn't mean the next one is going to be heads. It's like statistically, it's going to regress back to 50-50 the way it always does. So with turnover luck, you assume that like tomorrow, Patrick Mahomes goes back to a normal level of turnover luck. And when that happens, the Chiefs offense is fine. My argument is simply that I don't think you can assume that. One, because it hasn't happened yet, and we have seen improbable statistical runs go on for a while. Now, we kind of put that down to luck and variance, but maybe there's actually something driving it, which was my second point. As much as his turnover-worthy play rate has been the same, he does have more bad turnover-worthy plays this year. So turnover-worthy plays in our system is essentially any play with a minus one or worse grade.
This is where the email comes in.
From Mahomes or for any quarterback. But we have much more room in the scale than that. We have minus 1.5. We have minus twos. You can get a lot worse than just a minus one. And if you look at the minus 1.5s or worse, Mahomes has one fewer than all of last season, including the playoffs. He has basically double the worst rate of his career so far in bad turnover.
The real
plays.
Bad ones.
And so those, I think, are important.
Andy, how would you pronounce F-E-H-L? Fell? Andrew Fell?
Sure.
So he was bringing this point up. This was the other day. I was listening to today's podcast, and you were discussing how Mahomes has more turnover-worthy plays last year than this year. Do you think it could be more predictive to have a degradation of turnover-worthiness instead of a yes or no? Is there a possibility, possibly a spot in the middle for semi-worthy and super-worthy and the whole thing? And the answer is yes, and what you just described is what we've done. By the way, it's nice to see my baby turnover-worthy plays and my two babies, big-time throws, becoming more mainstream. You notice? More mainstream. You're starting to see it now that we have it in PSV2 and the whole deal. Now that those numbers are a part of your elite package, 25% off with NFL Pod. Now that we've added them, you know, they're being used more. But that's the point, right? So we did it. We looked at this the other day. We lump minus one, minus 1.5, minus two into the turnover-worthy play bucket, as you said. But historically, a minus one play gets turned over about 30-35% of the time. Minus 1.5 plays more like 60, and a minus two plays more like 80-85. Minus two plays are very rarely dropped interceptions when they're so bad.
Right.
So you might argue that a minus one maybe shouldn't be that bad. That, you know, something that's turned over 30-40% of the time, like,
let's
that's
not
still
pick at that thread.
That's a bad play either way. But the point is, there are levels of turnover worthiness, to answer Andrew's point. We do have that baked in. We do roll them all up into one number. But on a per-play basis, Mahomes' turnover-worthy plays are worse. In fact, there might be a counting snafu, too, because he had two on one play. So I don't know that we have the ability to add two to one play, so there might be an extra one. I'm really...
You were just picking it up.
I am. But I'm what trying to doing? Inform people that on one play, he did drop a snap, recover it, and then get up there and, you know, have another turnover to play for an interception.
My overall point with all of this is that I don't think we can act as if this is the same Chiefs offense that we've seen in 2018, 19, 20, just with added turnovers, right? There are fundamental differences to what is happening with Mahomes and with the Chiefs offense that cannot simply be explained by, well, he's had a few balls bounce off the hands of his receivers and those have been caught by defenders, and therefore they've turned the ball over in opposing territory. That's the only difference, right? If you look like explosive pass play percentage, this year the Chiefs ranked 28th in the NFL. The year before, second. The year before that, 11th. The year before that, second. So the 2018 one is the interesting one, because that's the year where they had a garbage defense as well, which is another influencing factor in all this. The 2018 version of the Chiefs ranked second in explosive pass play rate. This year's version ranks 28th. In addition to that, Mahomes is making more hideous mistakes with the ball than he has in the past. Like, there are differences. Now, I'm not saying that if the interception luck does go back to normal, you probably don't notice them. Like, they're small enough that you're not saying, like, is there anything wrong with the Chiefs offense? It's probably enough for them to overcome all the issues anyway. But I don't think you can just say there's no problem.
So they're not creating the same explosives while the riskiness is more extreme.
Right, and I think teams are frustrating them into making more mistakes or more glaring mistakes. Like, the fact that they can't create those big explosive plays. The team that I always got reminded of with Kansas City was that 98 Vikings offense with Randy Moss and Chris Carter and Jake Reed and Randall Cunningham and Robert Smith and all these explosive playmakers. And it felt like no matter what the game was and no matter how much they got in a hole, it didn't matter because everybody there believed that we were only ever 30 seconds away from putting up 14 points and erasing whatever the gap is, right? And that's what you felt like with this Chiefs offense, the Houston game, right? We're down, what, 24 points or something? Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, we'll roll. We'll get it back. Not a problem. We'll put up 24 points in the next 10 minutes. It's not a thing. And that's exactly what they did. Every time they got in a hole, it was like, well, forget the run game. Let's just ball out and put the points on. Now you don't have that feeling anymore. And I think more importantly, they don't have that feeling anymore. They are acutely aware that they don't have those big explosive plays just on tap the way they used to. And they're also aware that they've been turning the ball over a lot. And they're also aware that their defense is going to give up points still. So all of those three things together, it's not your granddaddy's Chiefs offense. Oh, it's boy. Different.
Do you, I used to give them 3 weeks ago.
Right.
Was giving them so much credit for those games where they're patient, right? Because in part, I mean, I remember the games off the top, like the Chargers game week two last year. The Chargers did a really good job of stopping the Chiefs until Mahomes had one of the best throws of the season on the run to Tyreek Hill for like 70 yards. And it was like, oh, here's your explosive. They had those games where it was like, I'll take the five-yard out, screen here and there, hitch, curl, it's all there. Take it. Mahomes doesn't miss those throws. They continue to move the chains. And then there's one or two of those big-time throws when they need it, or a big-time play at the end. I mean, even week one, it was against the Browns, right? Patient, take all the underneath stuff. Oh, here's a 70-yarder to Tyreek Hill. And it's essentially those plays are turning into turnovers instead right. of the explosives, is what you're saying.
I didn't have no plays filtered when I did my explosive play thing, but it actually works in my favor. They go from second. Their numbers are now second in 2020, seventh in 2019, not 11th, and first in 2018. So in the last 3 years, they've been second, seventh, and first in the statistic. And this year, they are 27th, I think, once the no plays are turned on. So again, this is a fundamental difference. The term that was thrown out there was there's no fundamental reason that this Kansas City Chiefs...
Fundamental.
Yes, and I didn't use it. Somebody else brought it up. There's no fundamental reason
for you.
That the Chiefs' offense is struggling relative to previous years. I think there might be. We're just... not looking for it hard enough.
Let me add some context here. So Mahomes, I'll do some quick math here. You mentioned the degradation that Andrew mentioned, right? He has 64% of his turnover-worthy plays are on the high end. On that, it's like 60 to 85%. This is going to become a turnover. Last year, 8 out of 23. So was that's over 33%. But, 35% or so. 23 is a prime number. It's not something you just do off the top of your head. But 8 for 22 is 36%. 8 for 24 is 33%. So it's like right in the middle.
You can't be the percentage guy.
It's like 34.8%.
If you're going to mail it in once you get to a prime number, because that's where the math gets too difficult.
I do batting averages in my head. So, right. So this year, the number, here's the number to answer this question. Is Mahomes more unlucky this year?
Uh-huh.
In one, if you just use total number, no. If you use how bad the play was based off our grading, which historically is indicative of whether or not it's going to become a turnover.
You mean that in reverse, right? Is he more lucky this year or unlucky this year?
Is he more unlucky this year?
Yes.
So I'm answering that question.
Yeah, but you've said it the other way around.
Okay. So is Mahomes more unlucky this year?
If you just use total number, and yes.
If you're just using total number, yes, he's more unlucky. If you're using how bad the turnover play worthy plays were, he's not, or he is right. Expected
it's
level
more
of
marginal.
Luck, right? Again, once 64% of his turnover worthy plays this year are of the worst kind,
right?
And last year it was only 34%.
And there are other numbers that say that he's actually more lucky this year, or more unlucky this year, in terms of like other numbers that would be influencing this. He has a lower drop rate from his receivers this year than in previous years. Now, those drops have ended up bouncing into the hands of defenders, so it's been like a double-edged sword there. But there are things working in his favor this year as well. Like, it isn't just bad luck, those few plays.
He had this level of luck in the Super Bowl, by the way. He had four, I believe, in the 49ers game. And by the way, like, a bad fumble is on that bad end of the scale. He's got a bunch of those fumbles. He had two just this weekend. Again, not the one that's a strip sack that you really can't avoid, the ones that are avoidable
right.
where it's poor ball security. Mahomes has had a few of those.
So anyway, my point is essentially, I don't think that it's necessarily a given that this turnover run that they're on is simply variance and will swing back in the direction of middle of the road. it will to a degree because there's certainly luck involved. Like, you know, we can all think of the plays that hit a receiver in the hands and bounce into defenders. That is bad luck. But there are also other things driving this. And, you know, the idea that we've talked about before that Mahomes is making some of the same plays, but in like inherently those are risky plays. Like the interception he threw in the direction of Josh Gordon this past week, that was a throw where at no point was it ever open. But Mahomes takes chances that if you put the ball in the air with a defender whose back is to you and just put it in the vicinity of the receiver, he will make a play and bail him out, right? Not well, bail him out is the wrong word. You take a chance. You put it in the air, your receiver makes the play, and then at the end of that, you're like, how does Mahomes do it? It's incredible. He's not human, right? But the risk is you put the ball in the air and the defender doesn't buy it and sticks an arm out and bats it up in the air, and now it's a pick. Now, that's the most unlucky way that can work out, but it's not like that isn't a risk every time you attempt that pass, and he attempts that pass a lot. Like, that's how he plays the game.
Yeah.
So this was, to an extent, an inevitable result of the way Mahomes plays, and now it's not being offset by an 80-yard bomb to Tyreek Hill every week. Like, this is part of the issue.
The other part of it, too, like, there was one early in the season where it was a miscommunication on a scramble drill, and again, most of the time when we're evaluating this, we will not absolve the quarterback, but just not completely blame the quarterback when there's a miscommunication, right? If you know. Now, there are times when we can clearly see the receiver should have run this, the quarterback should not have thrown that, whatever it is. But that was another one where we kind of said, eh, it's not like he expected Travis Kelce to be in a certain spot. Is it a little risky? Is it a Mahomesian type of play that usually works out and it didn't this time? Yes, and it turned into an interception because he was, but it was risky in the sense that he was expecting Kelce to do a thing on the scramble drill. Kelce didn't do it and he threw the ball right to a defender. Where it's like, ah, I could see where Mahomes is thinking, but it's inherently like a boom or bust type of play. And even those types of plays, that, the Josh Gordon one, they're coming back to bite this year.
But again, like,
those are the ones I would expect to kind of come back down to earth.
To an extent, but there's also a degree to which he was always riding the other end of that scale for a while. Like, every one of these numbers where you look at the sheet and it's like Mahomes in his old little world, and you're like, oh, maybe the rules just really don't apply to Mahomes. He's a freak. Maybe he is human, and he was just riding like a run of insanely high variance for a while. And okay, he might be riding the other end of that. Like, he's gone all the way over the crest of the wave, and now he's down in the trough. So somewhere in the middle is where he actually lives. But like, we might have to start reassessing the idea that like the rules of play don't apply to Patrick Mahomes. Like, maybe they actually do, and he was just able to buck them for a longer period of time than people typically are able to.
Let me wrap up the Mahomes argument with this, though. As much as we want to talk about the turnovers and they're a factor, the positively graded plays, the plays where he is moving the chains on passes beyond the sticks and all that stuff, those are far and few between this year compared to previous seasons. That is, ultimately, that's probably, that's as big of the difference, I think, as maybe the turnover-worthy plays. The offense is still moving the ball overall. The turnovers are happening and all that stuff. They're not creating, you mentioned explosives, they're not creating explosives, they're not creating just general open passes beyond the sticks, and we're seeing games where Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are contained, which used to not really happen all that often.
And by the way, it should go without saying, but this is the world where you need to say everything. Obviously, the biggest problem with the Chiefs right now is that their defense is one of the worst in the NFL.
Yes.
And if that goes from like terrible to below average, all of these problems disappear overnight.
Yeah, the 2018 Chiefs were generally able to overcome it other than a few games.
But the 2018 Chiefs is why the offense is still a problem, because this version is not doing what the 2018 version did with similarly terrible defenses impacting them.
And the other thing I'll say, too, that I always made this Chiefs, Patriots, dynasty, like, this is what we expected the Chiefs to be. The Patriots had seasons where, I mean, how many years was, like, the dynasty over? Like, 15 straight years? Oh, this is the year, it's over. Like, they lost by a million to the Chiefs on Monday Night Football, whatever.
Why you got to bring that game up?
Well, I mean, because sometimes people overreact and they're like, oh, Tom Brady's done. It's like,
people.
12 years later.
People.
Just people. Ah, people were doing it. This guy from ESPN wrote this article about Tom Brady being cooked. Special contributor ESPN, Sam Monson, back in 2014.
All right.
Anyway, all I'm saying is the Patriots dynasty, or dynasty for some people here, they faced adversity. You know, I mean, that's the nature of the NFL. We've talked about that on here. Sean McVay faced adversity a couple years ago. He had to adjust his offense. It's okay for a great team, which the Chiefs have been the last 3 years, to face adversity. And now, like, let's see. Like, are they going to continue to be one of the best teams in the NFL, or have they hit a significant roadblock in their team build, in their dynasty effort? You know, I mean, that's the storyline we're following here. That's why we're talking about it so much. It's a big deal here in 2021.
Yeah. Now we got to talk about the injury-ravaged Green Bay Packers playing the Arizona Cardinals on Thursday night.
Oh, are we previewing that game on this show?
Yeah, quickly.
I forgot about that.
Uh-huh.
Who's available?
Nobody.
No. Davante Adams and Alan Lazard.
Adams and Lazard are probably out, which leaves them with, you know, not that much.
Oh, man, this is a good game. The spread's gone. What's it now? It started at 3. Arizona by 3, which, again, is essentially saying that the 6-1 Packers and the 7-0 Cardinals are even teams. Cardinals get the home field advantage. Now, last time I saw it was 6.5.
Yeah, 6.5 still.
6.5. So they're saying all of these Packers injuries are going to be worth 3.5 points here, about.
Yeah.
As of Wednesday afternoon here.
I mean, this is really interesting. I'm kind of bummed that we don't get to see, like, the fully healthy version of each team.
I know.
But it becomes really interesting of, like the narrative has been for years. Rodgers to Adams is phenomenal. It's like career pass rating of like 123 or something. But when you have to go beyond Davante Adams, that's when the problems arise. Okay, well, what happens if you don't even have Davante Adams and you have to roll with it before? Now, obviously, it's not the first time we've ever seen Rodgers without Davante Adams. But it is fascinating now that he's going up against this undefeated team who keep proving week after week after week that they can cause problems.
Yeah. I keep wanting the Cardinals defense to prove it to me. This would have been one of those games. Hey, prove it against the Packers. Now it's a little bit easier, but again, I think they're doing some nice things, disguising coverages, using their safeties, their versatile linebackers. Pass rush has been solid up front with J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones coming back and the whole deal. So it's a good development, I guess, for Arizona. Obviously, that
sure.
It looks like it's going to be a little bit easier. Not that any NFL game's easy, but Rodgers is going to have to play superhuman, I think, in this one,
which he's certainly capable of doing. And by the way, like another receiver, like Valdes-Scantling, still on IR, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
So that's essentially their top three receivers that you would be rolling with normally. Like, it's going to be the likes of Randall Cobb, Amari Rodgers, the rookie. I mean, you're going to see a ton of Aaron Jones. You might even see a ton of Aaron Jones lining up at receiver to give him somewhere to go with the ball. Maybe a ton of Robert Tonyan. Like, these are the players that he's going to have to get it done with, which, again, it's Rodgers. Anything is possible, but that's a hell of a more difficult task than taking the play to Davante Adams against a cornerback that he will be vastly superior than on a one-on-one matchup.
Do we have anyone else that's out that we know because of COVID? Yeah, MVS is still on injured reserve. Guys like Preston Smith, questionable. What was I going to say with the Cardinals, too? Oh, it's either one person that's bugging us or multiple people wanting us to just give credit to Rashawn Gary because he's having a good season.
No, it's one guy.
It's one guy that just keeps bugging us. So Rashawn Gary's having a good season.
He is.
He's having a breakout year in year three.
It's a weird victory lap to take, though, because it's year three. Like, how far into a guy's career can he break out and you still be right about the draft pick?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because at some point, if you have to pay him a second contract, I mean, you're not getting the value. You're not getting the value on that rookie contract.
Yes.
But for perspective, Rashawn Gary right now, fifth in the NFL with 35 pressures. He's got an 83.6 pass rush grade. That is, let's see, when we re-rank it, that's also eighth. And, you know, he did start showing these signs down the stretch last year. Week 16 through early in the playoffs, he was one of the better edges in the NFL. Disappeared a little bit in the conference championship game, but yeah, he's been good. He's been good rushing the passer. So good job, Rashawn Gary.
The Packers are in this interesting spot because they've had injuries to essentially two of their best defenders. They've lost Za'Darius Smith and they've lost Jaire Alexander, which has forced guys like Rashawn Gary to be like the guy, the primary pass rusher. And it's forced rookie Eric Stokes to be the primary number one corner. And I would say those have gone in different directions. Gary's actually stepped up and done a really good job. Stokes has been like okay, beaten up a little bit.
Every time he makes a good play, he gets beat.
Right.
They get
but all of a sudden, when they get those guys back, like this is one of those false, good force multipliers where you're going to get better at two spots. You're going to get better because you got the All-Pro coming back, and you're going to get better because the dude that was having to play as the number one all of a sudden gets to settle back to be the complementary piece and probably got significantly better during the time he was forced to be the number one that will upgrade that position.
At 6.5, so just to reiterate too what happened on Sunday, the Washington football team, they didn't punt. They moved the ball up and down the field. They got stopped on fourth down 3 times. And I saw a nice, healthy debate between Dr. Eager and Renner and Aaron Nagler, of course. How good is this Packers team? You know, we've got the 2019 version didn't feel as good as 13-3. They were 13-3 last year. They felt dominant. This year, like, are they somewhere in between? What I think they're more somewhere in between. And it really depends on your perspective, right? They've done it with some injuries. And after the week one disaster, they've been better. And they could get better. On the other hand, they haven't beaten anybody that's really that good. So first real big test for the Packers, really, since week one with the Saints. I think they'll cover. I think the spread's getting too out of hand. That I think Rodgers will help keep it close. But I don't know how if the Packers can stop this Cardinals offense. So I think the Cardinals win, and I'll say the Packers cover with Rodgers. More superhuman-type effort trying to keep it close here on Thursday Night Football.
There are a bunch of numbers that suggest that the Cardinals are riding the high end of variance a little bit, and a bunch of numbers you would expect to regress, whether it's Kyler Murray under pressure, whether it's insane, they've given up a ton on the ground, they haven't quite, like, there's a few different numbers that are unusually good. I think they have a really high third down number as well on one side of the ball. I'm not saying it's happening this week. I'm not saying it'll ever happen. Like, these are things that sometimes go that way. But there is the scenario where the 7-0 Cardinals start to look a little bit more close to where people thought they would be, rather than like the best team in the NFL, which their record says they are.
I don't know if they're the best team in the NFL, but
right. So again, I don't know if it'll happen this week. Their defense, I think, has done a good job of like tailoring what they're doing to specific offenses. I would anticipate them doing that again. But there's always that kind of shadow looming in the background that this team could come down to earth in a few different high leverage ways that would torpedo their hopes of like being dominant.
The last thing I want to add, I tweeted out the stats the other day. I mentioned all offseason, Kyler Murray, throw the ball intermediate level. He has completely changed. This is his, at the intermediate, 10 to 19 yard level. PFF grade was 38th out of 39 as a rookie. It was 27th in 2020. It's now second here in 2021. Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury in this offense starting to attack the money zone, really, in the NFL. 10 to 19 yards. That is the money zone where the best quarterbacks, the best offenses, they excel there. And Kyler Murray's up to second. That improvement is why Kyler Murray is in the MVP conversation. So I like Arizona to win this game. I think Rodgers helps to keep it close. Where are you going with the 6.5?
Arizona... I will pick them to cover as well. Ooh. Just given those injuries.
Points are just too much. There you go. All right. Well, that's it for the Wednesday show. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. Don't forget NFL Pod. You get all these great stats and numbers for 25% off. NFL Pod, any PFF subscription over at PFF.com. Special thanks to Manscaped, to DraftKings, and special thanks to you, everybody on YouTube. Give us the thumbs up if you're live or even if you're watching on replay. If you're in podcast land, we appreciate everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. We preview all things week 8 in the NFL.